Part 2, Chapter 6. Quote, Ove l'aura si sente, where the dawn is felt or heard. Petrarch. The dock at Lefkas was small, but crowded. It was the one place on the island through which all tourism and commerce had to pass. When Harvey and Mahogany stepped ashore at the harbor, the captain was overcome by a feeling he had been there before. It was not, as the reader might expect, that he had taken on the exact shape of someone else and was reliving another's life in that place in another time, but rather that he had a nominal attachment to the place, for Lefkas, or Leucadia, as it is called in English, was the sister city to Harvey's own Leucadia, California. It was only natural, therefore, that Harvey feel the same sense of nostalgia a native Venetian might feel when walking along the boulevards and past the incomparable facades of the homes and buildings in Venice, California. In fact, it seemed so familiar that Harvey began to sob uncontrollably. Mahogany attempted to console him, but he too knew Leucadia, and he felt a similar nostalgia for the place. As soon as they made their way into town, they were accosted by a stray dog who rushed toward them, barking and obstructing their progress. Taking on the offender's personality, Harvey fell to his knees and barked back, and he continued to yelp until Mahogany tempted him with a piece of cake. When the captain finally quit howling, Mahogany led him onto a bus, and Harvey slept in his friend's lap until they reached Vasiki, where he leapt up and bounded into the streets. It was puppy heaven. The small tourist town was alive with people strolling the walkways, and Harvey made it his goal to sniff the derrieres of each and every one. At first the tourists were shocked by this strange man rushing about on all fours, chasing seabirds and leaving his mark on the trees. But soon they realized he was harmless, and they became enamored of his playful antics and his puppy dog eyes. The owner of a luxury hotel noticed the crowd that had gathered to admire the captain, stroking his shaggy hair and scratching him behind the ears, and the owner brought him some scraps from the hotel kitchen. Harvey swallowed them in one gulp and followed the owner to the hotel for more. The crowd followed too, and while Harvey dined in the kitchen, the owner attended to his new guests. He ran out of rooms just as Mahogany reached the counter. "I'm sorry," he said. "That's okay," said Mahogany. "I can take my dog somewhere else." "He's your dog?" said the owner. "Excuse me." He scratched a name off the register. "The penthouse is free." "Fine," said Mahogany, taking the key and heading upstairs. While Mahogany rested in the room, Harvey sniffed about outside. By now the boarders were aware of the magnificent animal that was lodging with them, and they all had snacks for him when he scratched at their doors. They became so accustomed to his furry presence that they even went about their business, dressing, undressing, bathing, and conversing, as if Harvey were not in the room. The only problem, they discovered, was that Harvey was not entirely housebroken, and he had a nasty habit of getting into their suitcases and urinating on their designer clothes. Still, he was a great favorite. Despite the lovely setting, Mahogany was despondent. The time he had spent in his mind in Paleokastritsa with the books and belongings of Adelphine had only served to deepen his dismal depression. Also, the fire in the printers had destroyed his once certain future, and the outcome of his search was again unsure. If he knew the outcome, he felt, for better or for worse, he could get on with his life. The next morning, after breakfast, Harvey and Mahogany decided to visit Greece's most spectacular stretch of coast, Porto Katsiki. Less than 4 miles from Vasiki, The beach was, in fact, spectacular. Set between two dramatic cliffs, the tree-clad mountains behind it plunged dramatically down to a fan of golden sand that spread lazily into the water. It was a place for a goddess, thought Mahogany, and Harvey agreed. The only thing to spoil the scene were the groups of tourists that were scattered about in every pose of contorted collapse. Among the most hideous were three hellish, blood-stained Germans that had the parts and bearings of women, but were girt with hydras of bright green and had serpents twined about their temples for hair. Footnote. See Dante's description of the Furies, Inferno, Canto 6, lines 121 to 124. Again. Among the most hideous were three hellish, blood-stained Germans that had the parts and bearing of women, but were girt with hydras of bright green and had serpents twined about their temples for hair. Each of the three was rending herself with her nails as she spread oil on her skin. They struck fear into everyone who saw them, including the canine captain, who kept close to Mahogany's heels until they reached a secluded spot up the coast. When they were out of sight of the tourists, Mahogany found a stick for Harvey and tossed it into the water. The captain splashed in after it and came bounding back for his friend to throw it again. Mahogany did throw it again, and again, and again, and again, until he finally grew weary and lay down on the sand. Closing his eyes, he stared into the saffron of the sun and thought, "I will have to learn to suffer better than this if I want them to weary of punishing me." Left to himself, Harvey sat on his haunches and stared at the waves. There was a rapture in their music, and he began to mimic the rhythm of the water with the rhythm of his breath. Then, extending his arms, which were no longer paws, he closed his eyes and began to chant. Slowly, Harvey became the water and the sky and the sun, and as the energies of the universe ran through him, he became their end and their source. Finally, after 14 minutes, he opened his eyes to the most beautiful woman he had ever seen. She was walking toward him, rising from the foam, wearing a conch-shell bikini. He recognized her at once as the Cytherean goddess of love, that spark and kindling to genital fire, Aphrodite. Remarkably, as she stepped from the sea, her feet made no imprint on the sand, and so light was her stride that she did not move a single thing she touched. Footnote. The dead in Dante's Inferno do not move the earth when they walk. Thus, by Dante's clumsy steps, they know he is from the world of the living. Harvey was seized with the desire to throw himself upon her and let her have her way with him. But a divine, better judgment prevented him from doing so, and he watched as she disappeared down the coast. Still, Harvey was not completely immobilized, and he rose to follow her, leaving Mahogany to bake in his dreams. Aphrodite stopped at a group of tourists that had gathered beneath the eucalyptus shadows to play guitar and sing. And when the group moved to make room for her, Harvey slipped in as well. As fortune would have it, the captain sat next to the only American in the circle. The poor fellow, though it was the one thing in life he most wanted to do, was terrified to sing in public. Consequently, Harvey was terrified as well, and would have remained so if a Spanish woman had not arrived and sat between them. With the Spaniard at his side, the captain was overcome with a sudden fearlessness and spontaneous love of song. Unfortunately, along with the woman's personality, he also inherited her voice, which was not in the least bit pleasant, and when Harvey began to sing, the group was thoroughly amused. Still, they encouraged him to continue, and he enjoyed himself to no end. The guitar passed from person to person, each one offering something, until the American, unable to control his anxiety, jumped up and turned on a boombox he had near at hand. Harvey, feeling the rage of the entire group, was about to fly at the offender's throat, but Aphrodite struck him with a demolishing glance, and the American picked up his stereo and skulked away. When it came time for Aphrodite to play, she declined the instrument and opted to sing a cappella. She chose an ancient ballad about a faithful sailor who, promising his love, lost his life trying to find her in the sea. As she sang, Harvey, with an echo of the voice he had stolen from the sirens, sang a counter-melody which transformed the soliloquy into a musical dialogue between loved one and lover. The sublime harmonies moved like waves that issued from two shores, rolling and meeting in a delicate flash of foam, then passing through each other to expire at the foot of the one they seek. When the ballad was finished, everyone fell still, the Germans with their oil, the gluttons with their beer. Even Sisyphus the wave ceased for a moment to demolish castles. Staring at Harvey, the nymph broke the silence. "Are you free tonight?" she asked. "I," said Harvey, "am freedom's prisoner." Her name was not Aphrodite, nor Circe, nor Calypso, but Laura Elizabeth Antipas, that ungrateful actress from Mantua. While the others went back to their trials, Harvey and Laura decided to walk along the beach. And when the warm waves were washing their ankles, she reached out and took Harvey by the hand.